10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I want you to forget everything about your cancer. I want you to forget everything about what your doctors have told you. I want you to forget everything about your treatments. And I want you to start with a blank slate. Howdy, Croc Nation. This is your pal, Dr. Tom Iannelli. Here for another Croc Podcast. Angel sitting to my left, Angel Santana. Good afternoon, Angel.
Good afternoon to you. I'm happy.
You should be happy, and I have news for you. If you have a seatbelt, please fasten your seatbelt and hold on. Today's going to be a heck of a podcast. I have several surprises for you, young angel.
I truly don't know what they are.
Well, last week I took you out for ice cream.
Oh, that's right. Butter pecan.
Yes, it was. It was a triple scoop on a waffle cone. Oh. And this week, guess where we're going?
I'm thinking about the waffle cone.
We're going on vacation.
Oh, vacaciones.
We're going on vacation. Now, it is a vacation, my Croc Nation, that you're all going to be very happy about, because we are going to be taking a vacation from the Defining Survivorship module. I'm sure you guys are very happy about a little bit of something different. I was thinking to myself this week, what are we going to talk about? We're kind of trying to fill some time until we talk to Dr. Charles Shapiro from Mount Sinai to kind of put the finishing touches on that module. And I was thinking to myself, as I was sitting in a waiting room waiting to get my yearly colonoscopy, which you prayed for.
Yes,
me
we did.
For,
we did.
I thought to myself, what a wonderful time to launch another module, our surveillance module.
Ooh.
And I'd like to start this podcast, as we start every podcast, with a story. Oh, and I would like to tell you about a very, very fine man who actually is the finest man I personally have ever met. And his name was Giuseppe Angelillo. Giuseppe Angelillo was born in 1900 in a small little town, actually a little village, a little farming village, maybe about 45 minutes east of Naples, Italy. Joseph was a precocious young man, and at the age of 14, his mother put him on a train and sent him to Naples to learn a trade, and that trade was to learn how to be a baker. In 1914, he was basically taught that trade, and in about 1916 or so, he was conscribed into the Italian infantry during the First World War. He told me he was the worst infantryman ever to live. He did everything possible to get out of the army, but they wouldn't let him out, but he finished. He didn't get killed, thank God. Mm. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. Mm. And in 1918, after the war, he ended up in Paterson, New Jersey. He started a bakery, had a few kids, had a few grandkids, one of which was me. And at the age of 79, unfortunately, he died of colon cancer. And that's what brings me to the point of why I was sitting in a waiting room waiting for my colonoscopy this week. This was my third colonoscopy because of my family history of colon cancer. And I thought to myself, what a great opportunity for us to celebrate Joseph's life. And also to thank him, because I am not sitting in that chair getting a colonoscopy unless my grandfather had colon cancer. And we are very, very delighted today. We have a special guest today also to talk to you guys about not only the surveillance of colorectal cancer for some of our survivors who are who have survived colorectal cancer, but also two family members and other Croc Nation people. To talk about this very sensitive issue, right? It's not a real easy issue to talk about, right? Sitting in a room waiting to have a garden hose put up your you-know-what. but nevertheless, what my goal today is to demystify the process, tell you a little bit about colon cancer, tell you a little bit about the surveillance of colon cancer, tell you about colon cancer, rectal cancer, anal cancer survivorship. And actually, you know who's going to do that? I'm not going to do that. Our special guest. We have a special guest. who also happens to be your doctor, Angel.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, Dr. PJ Singh will be joining us today. PJ is a good friend of mine. He and I work together at Garnet Medical Center in Middletown, New York, as our producer and dear friend Angel does. Dr. Singh is very distinguished. He's a surgical oncologist here on staff. He's the medical director of our GI tumor program, gastrointestinal, for those not in the know. He's the medical director of our breast surgery department here at Garnet. He's a clinical professor of surgery at Touro Medical School. He also is a scholar. He is a artist. He is a fine gentleman. Let's talk a little bit about his schooling. And he's not here yet, so I can sort of embarrass him without him being here. He went to school in New Delhi, India, at a very prestigious institution. He did his surgical residency there, specializing in breast cancer. That's what he did his thesis on. He then came over to the States, and he did his surgical training at Montefiore, which is a wonderful medical system here in New York City. Then he did a research fellowship at Memorial Sloan Kettering for 2 years, and he did a surgical oncology and hepatobiliary fellowship at Mount Sinai. He has a plethora of papers, presentations, posters, abstracts, book chapters, thesis. He's also on all sorts of societies and committees and all that kind of thing. And it is our pleasure to introduce to you today our speaker, who will be talking about colorectal cancer in general, colorectal cancer surveillance, colonoscopies, who, what, when, where, what it's all about. I will be asking him questions, telling you about my experience. And by the end of this podcast, everybody, I bet you there, as long as one person out there who is a candidate for a colonoscopy, for surveillance, if that gets done, then Angel, we've done our job.
That's right. That's right. I'm excited. I just left there. I'm ready. I'm ready for him to come in. I'm excited. It's like, it's a totally different chapter, you know, but I think you're going to be good. Awesome. So we'll just take a quick break.
Yep. And why don't you tell everybody about our social media?
Absolutely. Folks, if you haven't had an opportunity to join us, we feel here at the Croc Podcast, or as we call it, the Croc Nation, or the Crockers. Not to forget that we are available on so many social media accounts. Let's start off with the fact that our public domain, so to speak, has now broadened. We are now accepted on Apple. Ooh. So Apple has said, listen, we need the Croc Podcast. Croc Nation, you're in there with us. Spotify is with us now. iHeartRadio is just around the corner. So take advantage of that. Just type in the Croc Podcast. Website, crocvip.com. Facebook, CrocVIP. And, of course, the Twitter, at CrocVIP. You know, I forgot to mention this on many other episodes or any other shows. If you have any ideas or if they want to touch base with us, we'll gladly,
you know. Absolutely. We would love to have you on the podcast. Yeah. We're a young, growing podcast. And if you have something important to say, we would love to use this venue to help you voice that. If you have a special expertise that you'd like to share with us for our survivors, we'd love to have you relate. If you have any interest just in contacting us and telling us how we're doing, anything we can do to improve. My wife is our greatest fan and also our greatest critic. She tells me every week all the good things I've done and all the not so great things I've done. Angel, you've been there, done that.
That's it. And well, that's a good segue too, because if they want to leave a review,
yes,
what we know eventually, as we get so many reviews, we'll post the reviews on our website.
Exactly. If you have a 5-star or a 4-star, please place it on the Croc Podcast. If you have a 1-star or 2-star, you put it on the Have Faith, Let It Begin podcast.
Yeah, won't be the first. All right, so we're going to take a short break. When we come back in studio, we're going to have
Dr. PJ Singh.
All right, see you back. And, of course, that countdown in 10, 9,
8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back, Croc Nation. I'm sitting here with my good friend, Dr. PJ Singh. I already told you guys how awesome he is. Dr. Singh and I share an infatuation, if not an obsession, with reading existential literature. Not that we're nihilists. We're actually very passionate and optimistic people. PJ, I wanted to start. Now, I told Angel and I told the Croc Nation that this surveillance podcast is beginning a new module on surveillance. So we're going to start with colorectal cancer. And as you know, I underwent my third screening colonoscopy this week, and it went very well. And no matter how many times I've had it, no matter how many times that I'm on the inside knowing everything about the anesthesia and the whole thing, I can't help but getting freaked out. And we're going to talk a little bit about the process of colonoscopies to try to demystify that for our listeners. But I guess the first question I want to ask you is about colon cancer, colorectal cancer in general, it as an entity for our colorectal cancer survivors, as well as the people listening who may not be colorectal cancer survivors.
Thanks for inviting me, Tom. So talking about colon cancer, it is one of the most common cancers. Over 100,000 colon cancers and about 50,000 rectal cancers every year in the United States alone. And it is number third leading cause of death. And prevention is the best way to, you know, find it early, treat it early. And the best way to find it early is colonoscopy. There are other ways that can be used to detect colon cancer, but I would say colonoscopy is gold standard, and don't skip it.
Yeah, and I actually, you don't have the benefit of having listened to the first part of the podcast when we set the table for you, and basically the story was about my grandfather, Joseph, who died at age 79 of colorectal cancer. He was a very fascinating and intelligent man, and he was a Renaissance man, and he really didn't know. He was an immigrant, and he didn't know anything about surveillance or his family history or whatever. He was shipped off to learn how to be a baker when he was 14 in Italy. And as such, he would run and walk and swim and ride motorcycles and did everything until, you know, he started noticing some rectal bleeding. And by that point, it was a little bit too late. And he ended up dying at 79. And here's a guy who could have lived to be probably 90 years old. He lived a great lifestyle. And I'm sitting in the chair waiting for my turn to go in for my colonoscopy. And I really credit my grandfather for unfortunately sacrificing himself, yet giving me that gift. So that's sort of the way we started the podcast. I wanted to ask you a question about, if you didn't mind telling our listeners, the difference between the colon and the rectum.
So colon is the part of large intestine that absorbs most fluid. It starts where the appendix is for most people know where appendix is. That's where it starts, where the small intestine becomes the large intestine. And about 4 to 5 feet from there is where rectum is, which is about a foot from anal canal, or less than that. That's the basic difference between colon. Colon is mostly freely mobile structure in the abdomen. Rectum is fixed in the pelvis. Rectum helps absorption of more fluids and solidifying the stool, but both of them have nearly same function, and the risk factors for both colon and rectal cancer are nearly same.
Yeah, why don't we talk about those? That now that you bring that up.
So risk factor, most of the cancers in colon rectum are sporadic. That means they're not associated with any genetic predisposition. A healthy lifestyle is definitely preventive for colon cancer. Smoking, drinking more than three drinks, alcohol more than three drinks per day, and a sedentary lifestyle, diet high in red meat, they're all high risk factors for colon cancer.
So, again, I know Croc Nation what you're thinking. No way I'm going to go get that scope stuck up you know where, but and you're going to ask Dr. Singh, and I'm basically, you're channeling through me. Dr. Singh, I don't want this garden hose put up my, you know what. What are some of the other alternatives? how specific and sensitive are these alternatives. And then once you answer that, we're going to actually start getting into the process of the colonoscopy to make everyone not afraid. And believe me, I'm the biggest baby on earth. And if I can do it three times, you guys can do it standing on your heads. So let's talk a little bit about non-invasive.
So there are a few non-invasive tests. Basic test is a clinical examination, rectal examination. Well, you will pick up some rectal cancers, but just by putting your finger in the anal canal, but that's really only going to pick up a very few percentage of cancers. The next test would be what's called fecal occult blood test, means test if there is blood in the stool. Again, not very sensitive, maybe about 30% or less cancers. Again, those in advanced stages which are bleeding massively will be picked up. Then there is something called virtual colonoscopy. Those who are not a good candidate for anesthesia may undergo a CAT scan, a special CAT scan looking at colon. Not as sensitive as colonoscopy, but it may still work for some patients. There's something that's coming up right now which is called Cologuard. I think people must have heard about Cologuard. There's a lot of marketing and advertisement about that. It is a test that detects certain DNA and blood in the stool, but it's only sensitive about 40%. Again, for larger polyps and cancers, 58% of the tumors that can be detected, that may not be detected by Cologuard, and that's the advantage of having a colonoscopy, which is going to pick up about 95% of the tumors in early stages. So having discussed all these tests, I would say colonoscopy is still the gold standard.
I know this is more in the radiology world, but they have these cameras as well, I believe, that they can have you swallow and retrieve, I guess.
Yeah, that's called a capsule endoscopy. That is mostly for small bowel lesions, not as much as for large bowel.
Gotcha. So taking it to the next level. So we've already established. Now, if you absolutely, and I know many people who say they would rather die than have a colonoscopy, and I respect that. You know, here on this podcast, this is a safe place. We're not here to judge you. But as I said, if I can do it, anyone can do it. Let's talk a little bit about the process. So I think the worst thing about the colonoscopy that you have to wrap your head around is the actual prep. And the prep these days is probably so much better than it was in the ancient days when people would get pretty sick from the prep. And the purpose of the prep, Dr. Singh?
So prep is safe, especially if you are in good, otherwise healthy condition. let me tell you first thing about prep. Prep is basically drinking a stool softener. It's called Golightly. It's the standard prep. You start drinking till your bowel movements are clear. It's very well tolerated. Sorry, what was the next question?
Yeah, let's stick with the prep for a second. So basically the day before, so basically you're preparing yourself for about 2 or 3 days. The first maybe 2 or 3 days before, you start changing your diet a little bit. You're going to go a little bit low fiber. You're going to kind of stay away from certain things that might be problematic. Anything with red dyes, anything that's purple. I know my wife made a beautiful plate of beets the other day right before my prep, and I was really, really angry at her because I really wanted those beets. But that's another problem, you know, that we'll deal with in marriage therapy. We'll put that on the agenda. Then on day two, again, a little more, I guess, liquid diet, soft diet, and then day three is where you really suffer because if you're a foodie like me, you're not eating any solid food. You're eating a lot of, you know, clear soups and things like that. So then around 6 p.m. the night before, that's when the party starts, right? You start with your laxative and, you know, maybe about an hour or two after that, you take a few tablets as well. I had to take 4 Ducalox tablets. And as I said, then the fireworks happened and takes, you know, a couple hours to clean you out. But if you do a good job with your clear liquids, it's not so bad. And then the next day, you wake up in the morning, and depending on what time your case is, You go over to your doctor's office with the coronavirus. They call you into the office. And I'll tell you, I had a great experience. Everyone was very nice to me. No one knew who I was, which was great. I was very anonymous, so I can't, you guys are saying, of course they're going to treat you nice. They all know you're in the business, but nobody knew I was in the business. Everyone was, you know, just thinking I was John Q. Public, right? And treated me fantastic. They put an intravenous in, which is, you know, I can't tell you it's absolutely painless, but fairly painless. They ask you a bunch of questions. They do a history and physical. They check your vital signs. They hook you up to all the monitors, and then they wheel you into the procedure room, and your doctor comes and says hello to you, gives you a fist pump. And then all of a sudden, this awesome person, probably the most important person in the room, the anesthesiologist, comes and give you happy juice. And this happy juice is what I call the Michael Jackson drug, because it's, and I can certainly see, I guess it's Profanol, right?
Yep.
And after having Profanol now for the third time, I can tell you I definitely understand why Michael Jackson liked Profanol. It is the best sleep you'll ever have. I was reading my anesthesiologist's ID badge until I couldn't read it anymore, and then passed out, and the next thing you know, 40 minutes later, they wake you up, and that's the end of that. You don't have any pain. You don't have any issues. And Dr. Singh, tell us what the endoscopist is looking for, especially someone who, you know, who has a family history. You know, if a person is asymptomatic, and what that means is not having any symptoms, no rectal bleeding, no pain, blah, blah, blah. You know, we're not expecting anyone to have any big fungating masses or tumors. So what are they looking for exactly?
So the way you describe no family history, that's a screening colonoscopy. It means you have no symptoms. You're going there to screen you out if you have a tumor or not. Let me tell you about the recommendations and the guidelines. Things have changed recently. There are different societies. Some recommend starting colonoscopy at 45 and some say starting at 50. Stick to the local guidelines you have, but 50 is the latest you should have. That's screening if you have no symptoms. So essentially, the GI physician is putting the camera inside, starting with the anal canal, looking at anal canal. You know, first thing they would look at is hemorrhoids, if there's external bleeding sources or anything like that. Then from anal canal, they will go up to rectum, make a curve into the colon, and go all the way up to where appendix is, where small intestine joins large intestine. What they're looking for is any obvious tumor, ulcer, a polyp. A polyp is could be precancerous, could be a benign polyp.
Well, tell us what a polyp is.
So polyp is any projection or a lesion or a tumor.
It could be a pimple,
sticking out in the colon. That is a polyp. When you see a polyp, you biopsy it. It could be as simple as a benign polyp or what's called hyperplastic polyp or an inflammatory polyp, which means nothing to worry really. But then there could be other types of polyp, and the most worrisome of them we call adenomatous polyps, which have tendency over a period of time to change into cancers. And those adenomatous polyps could be a small polyp, 1 centimeter or smaller, or could be a bigger polyp. Could be a serrated polyp, means they are flat polyps. They may not be able to remove it colonoscopically. But anytime you see a polyp, you biopsy it or try to take them out completely.
Gotcha. So I'm getting another point again to my grandfather, my patron saint of my colon, you know, with that family history. There are certain familial tendencies toward colorectal cancer. There's also some syndromes with, you know, that sort of present as multiple polyps and things. Can you talk to us a little bit about family history as well as some of these polyp sort of conditions?
Sure. So there are two well-known syndromes. One of them is called familial adenomatosis polyposis, in which there are more than 100 polyps in the colon. That qualifies you as FAP syndrome, and it is associated with a gene called APC. And then there is another syndrome, very well-known syndrome. Some of you may have heard of it. It's called Lynch syndrome, which is also associated with other cancers in the body. I'm not going to go to details, but these are well-known syndromes that run in families. But these only cause less than 5% of the cancers. There are other cancers that can have genetic predisposition. Anytime there's a family history in the first-degree relatives of cancer, even though there's no history of polyposis, you're still at a higher risk of developing cancers. And if there's a family history, the recommendation is to start screening colonoscopy 10 years prior to the index case. So let us say if somebody in the family had colon cancer at the age of 45, the recommendation is start screening colonoscopy at 35.
Gotcha. So in addition, there's also another added benefit of colonoscopy. You know, obviously we're a cancer survivor podcast, so we talk to cancer survivors and their families. But also there's some benign things that people will want to know about if they have diverticulosis, which could be very problematic. And I'm sure you've gotten pulled out of bed plenty of night with some burst diverticulum and all sorts of surgical emergencies. So knowing about this stuff, I would think, would be helpful.
Absolutely. Diverticulosis is one of the most common conditions in Western societies. They say it's related to the diet, low fiber diet in our societies. Even I'm a migrant. I came from India, and back in India, we hardly see any diverticulosis or diverticulitis. But the moment we come from Asia to US, suddenly the incidence of diverticulosis and diverticulitis increases. So let me differentiate. Diverticulosis is the pockets or ballooning of the intestine, mostly on the left side of large intestine, and if it ruptures, it causes infection, and that term is called diverticulitis. So diverticulosis is a benign thing. It's harmless. And if you have diverticulosis, my recommendation is eat healthy, high fiber diet. And then if it gets infected, which is called diverticulitis, the first line treatment is antibiotics. And unless it's you've been suffering from diverticulitis more than 5 attacks in your lifetime, we really don't recommend surgery. But if it is ruptured, you need an emergency surgery. Or if there is an abscess, then I would say once everything is healed, you should see a surgeon and consider removing that portion. Diverticulitis or diverticulosis in itself is not associated with higher incidence of cancer.
Gotcha. So we have the benefit of being able to look at ourselves while we're talking to you all with our Zoom video camera. And I have to say, Dr. Singh was straight up. There is a problem with our American lifestyles, with our Western lifestyles. He mentioned the increased risks of colorectal disease, colorectal cancers, with our diet, red meat, those types of things. Not that you can't eat an occasional piece of red meat, of course, but something to think about. You also have to remember, many of us in the American society, we're very busy, we're very sedentary, we don't take care of ourselves. We have risk factors with our weight, our lifestyle, so yet another reason to really take our colon for a ride, you know, during these colonoscopies. Switching now to our colorectal cancer survivors. So these wonderful survivors wake up, and sometimes I guess they come with early stage disease that could be managed, I guess, intraluminally, and I'll have you talk about that, if it's very small tumors, if it's caught on a screen or on a interval colonoscopy. But more often than not, the scope goes in, people are having symptoms, bleeding, obstruction, and they find these big fungating masses or whatever, and then they have to have that cared for. So if a person is coming out of anesthesia from this wonderful dream they're having, their Michael Jackson dream, and you know, the doctor comes and they're expecting a big smile from their doctor's mouth, but instead they see a very concerned look when they wake up and they're told that terrible, I found something. What's next for these people?
So, depending on what they found, if it was a small polyp that they removed, they will still have to tell the patient, but we're hoping that polyp will be either completely removed, or it means if there is a tumor, it is completely out, or maybe it has not invaded yet. But if they remove something either completely or incompletely, if they removed something completely, it's a polyp, it's a large size polyp, you wait for the final pathology, and if there is cancer in it, the recommendation is to see a surgeon to have it, to have that surrounding area removed as well, along with some of the lymph nodes, to see if the disease has spread or not. But if they were not able to remove the whole thing and they just biopsied it, that means you definitely have to see a surgeon, wait for the pathology. It may take a few days, about a week or so. And depending on that, if it is a cancer, then the treatment is surgery. Remove the colon. Now it's called colectomy. These days we are doing minimally invasive surgeries, and more surgeries are doing be done robotically. In fact, our data now shows that patients are going home within 2 or 3 days after those surgeries. So minimally invasive surgery has really made a lot of difference instead of staying in the hospital for about 7 days to 10 days. If, on the other hand, it is an advanced tumor, which was not, patient had symptoms or obstruction, the treatment could be stenting, means relieve the obstruction by a GI procedure, put a stent, give them other modalities of treatment like chemotherapy or radiation, if it is in the rectum, to try to shrink the tumor. And if there is no distant spread of the disease, you can attempt a resection, means colectomy, at a later stage. So there are options, a lot of options we have, starting with conservative management, GI stenting to relieve the obstruction, which means putting a plastic through the obstruction so that patient can have a bowel movement, and treat it with chemotherapy and radiation, depending on where the tumor is. You can
exactly, and I think that, you know, we will have a podcast when we talk about site-specific cancer and the implications of treatment modalities. And I think the point of today's podcast is to avoid getting to this point. We don't want you to need a colectomy. We don't want you to need preoperative chemotherapy and radiation, and we certainly don't want you to have a colostomy bag. So all of these things being said, Dr. Singh, can you tell us a little bit about now a patient who has been diagnosed with colorectal cancer, has successfully completed their therapy, whether it's surgery alone, chemotherapy and surgery, chemotherapy, surgery, radiation in some sense. How often will you see these patients, and how often will they need to have repeat evaluation, surveillance, scopes, and things like that?
That's a good question. Once they have completed all their therapies, once they have recovered, the recommendation is a colonoscopy a year after when they had surgery. That's the first colonoscopy after the treatment. And if that is normal, I would say a 3 year after that second colonoscopy. And if it is normal, then 5 years from there on is the recommendation, unless something changes or they have symptoms. Or if colonoscopy or repeat colonoscopy within a year or 3 years found polyps, even those were benign, then I would say continue colonoscopy at a more frequent interval.
Very good. So we have a situation, everybody, where we have the ability to be proactive with our health. We have the ability to do the right thing for ourselves. We have the ability to, even though it doesn't sound very tantalizing, this experience, again, if I can do it, anyone can do it. I will be actually extraordinarily happy if there's an explosion of colonoscopies in the Orange County region over the next couple of months, motivating you all to get out there and see your GI doctors, who probably are going to be so busy now that we've motivated you to do this. Angel, do you feel so motivated that next week you're going to get your first colonoscopy?
Listen, I had mine already 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know what, I think what you guys talked about was very, very informative, because I was scared. I too was scared. And I think that what happens is it's that it's the fear of the unknown. Yes. But that's anything we do, right? But in this particular case, when you're going in and you're not knowing what the pain is going to be, because remember, when you think of surgery, you think of aches and pain. You feel like you're just going in and like, what, did anything even happen?
Yeah.
Literally, you're in and out.
Colonoscopy, it should be painless. There's you're not invading any tissues. You're just looking inside and coming. So it's actually painless, safe procedure.
Yeah, I think the biggest, and again, having had it three times, I think the third time I was less afraid of the process. Again, I'm in love with that drug, so I was actually looking forward to that sleep. But, you know, there is always the stress that our cancer survivors have of waiting for that other shoe to drop, you know, waiting to hear, oh my God, did they find anything? Do I have a recurrence? And of course, that's completely understandable, but I don't want you all to let that stand in the way of your good health, because as Dr. Singh said in the beginning, catching a tumor early makes all the difference in the world. Dr. Singh, I'd like to ask you, Angel, and I'd like to ask you if you have any questions of us or have anything else you'd like to say regarding this colonoscopy episode.
No, I think we covered a lot of things. One thing I want to add is anal cancers.
Please.
Now, anal cancer is not a typical colorectal cancer. Typical colorectal cancer comes from a different type of cell, which is called columnar cells, and it is adenocarcinoma. I don't want to go into details, but anal cancer, on the other hand, is a squamous, which is a different type of cancer type, which arises in the anal canal, which is only last 3 to 4 centimeters of the anus. These tumors can also be detected by colonoscopy, but most importantly, you don't even need a colonoscopy. Symptoms, bleeding, you feel something in the anal canal, go see your physician, a surgeon, or a GI. Just a digital, putting a finger inside or looking, may diagnose an anal cancer. In fact, it is much easier to treat anal cancer in the beginning. You don't even need surgery 90% of the time. Just chemotherapy and radiation can cure you. I would just like to add, I was talking to one of my friends who recently retired, and she sends warm regards to Dr. Ian Ellie, who treated her over 15 years ago for anal cancer, and she's been cancer-free. I wouldn't have known if she didn't tell me. So just want to let you know, it's a treatable disease. Colonoscopy can also find anal cancers, but just basic examination, and especially if you're a high-risk category. You want me to talk about some high-risk categories?
Yeah, of course.
You know, we have seen increased incidence of anal cancer in HIV population and patients with HPV. Those definitely should be screened. And we should keep an eye on those patients.
So let's talk a little bit about HPV. Clarify that.
So HPV is a human papilloma virus. Most people carry that virus, but the high-risk patients are those who have multiple sexual partners or anal sex, HIV. These are associated with the increased incidence of anal cancers. And detected early, in fact, precancerous stage of anal cancer, which is dysplasia, can be in fact treated without even chemotherapy or radiation, just by some basic medications. But if you find anal cancer, the treatment is easy. In fact, you know better than I do. Anal cancer are treated by radiation.
We definitely try to exclude you from that conversation for sure. The surgeons, yeah, we don't want anywhere near the anal canal.
Yeah.
So people, you would say, Dr. Singh, who are in the high-risk categories would definitely need to have their GI doctor, you know, on board, you know, on retainer, just to make sure they're screened.
Absolutely. In fact, their ID physicians have programs these days to screen those people for anal cancers. Now, incidence of anal cancer is about less than 10,000 a year, about 9,000 something cases. But it's easily treatable disease, and we just have to screen the high-risk population.
Excellent. Angel, you know how I always drag you in at the end to see from a layperson's point of view, if we met our, you know, hit our mark, if we were clear on anything, anything need clarification?
One of the things that I think separates this show from any other medical show that I've actually been researching and listening to is the fact that you both come in, you obviously are very knowledgeable with what you're doing, but you make it so simple and you phrase it and word it in a way that even I'm here sitting here going, okay, I haven't done that yet, I'm going to try this. And I think that's what's going to bring the viewers to understand more. And again, it brings back to the thing you said. It's all about knowing who your doctor is. It's about asking the right questions, even the wrong questions, which will ultimately give you the answers.
There's never a wrong question. You should feel free to ask any question. And if you're not comfortable with the answers you get, you got to change the doctors. But you should never feel bad about asking any question. It's your health. It's your body.
Yeah,
and you're right.
And actually, that brings up one more question I have before we sign off. I wanted to ask, would you feel, Dr. Singh, that the entrance into this sort of circumstance with colonoscopy and screening and all that type of thing would be through the primary care physician? Would you agree?
Yes. You know, primary care physicians are the first line doctors you see, and they make arrangements. Do you have to have it? No, but current system only allows to go through a primary physician. So yeah, definitely. And they're the ones who actually screen for other problems as well. So yes, you have to go through your primary physician.
Gotcha. And I wanted to just also, besides thanking Dr. Singh for spending his extraordinarily rare free time, I did want to say that on this podcast, what we're going to put, we're going to share one of your pieces of art. So in addition to a great physician and a great skilled surgeon, he also draws, he paints, he carves, and we're going to put one of his favorite pieces, I take a picture of it and put it on the podcast as our sort of, what would you say, our little...
Right, our main page. And you know what? I'm going to do one better. I'm going to up you one. I'm going to put it on my website.
Perfect.
As well.
Excellent. Excellent. So, excellent.
So thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Oh, our pleasure. And I wanted to say to everybody, so we have homework today, Croc Nation. First homework is to talk to your primary care physician. Find out, you know, if you are a candidate for colonoscopy. Number two is start doing some deep breathing and meditating, not to be afraid of it, because, again, if your friend Dr. E can do it, anyone can do it. Number three, you have to read two books. You have to read On Being in Nothingness, and you have to read The Stranger by Albert Camus.
My favorite.
Because again, existential learning is very important on this podcast, and I also want to end, as always, with my gratitude shout-outs, or Croc Nation gratitude shout-outs. Angel Santana, Have Faith, Let It Begin. Rod Freeman, Small Biz Up. Michael, JohnBenzea.com. CharlotteLarson.net, our wonderful friends on the West Coast who support this podcast. I also want to really end with great gratitude to my grandfather, Joseph Angelillo, who is my, as I said, my guardian angel, one of the greatest, if not the greatest men I have ever met. Gramps, I'm sorry that you had to die of this terrible disease, because had you had your colonoscopy, you would have had at least another 10 years with us to tell us great stories about your life, and you've done and you did so much to inspire me. This is Dr. Tommy and Ellie signing off. Can't wait till next week. We get back to our defining survivorship module, setting the table for Dr. Charles Shapiro from Mount Sinai, as he will complete that module on defining survivorship, cancer treatment survivor templates. Thanks a lot. I want to end this. Actually, I'm going to end this, Angel, in a different way, and this is the way I'm going to end it, because this is what I say when I leave a room with a patient, and this is the way we're going to end every podcast from now. This is your friend, Dr. Tommy Anelli, wishing you a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life.